Welcome. You're listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. We're Sandy and Ron Fraser.
Hello, everybody.
Well, we thought that we might discuss a very controversial subject. It seems to be controversial for just about everyone. It's the harmony of science and religion. We feel as Baha'is that science and religion must agree, and there's lots of controversy with the creationism and the evolution standpoints. And we'd like to discuss those and flesh them out a little bit and show you why we feel that they agree and they don't contradict each other.
One of the great Baha'i educators, Mr. Furitan, was speaking to a Christian astronomer in Australia. This man made some kind of a reference to a physical heaven where people go when they die. Mr. Furitan said, "But surely as an astronomer, you see that concept as metaphor and not a physical reality." The astronomer said, "Mr. Furitan, astronomy is my science. Christianity is my religion." It was as if this man had a wall down the center of his brain with belief on one side and reason on the other. There's a real problem with the approach that materialist scientists take and the approach that religious people take. For instance, science can't prove that God exists, but it can't prove that God doesn't exist. So there's no contradiction in that sense. Religion can say God exists, and science can say, I'll take your word for it, because I've got no evidence to the contrary. But a materialist scientist might say, God does not exist because I have no evidence to support that claim. Such a scientist has a very limited view of existence and sees only a simple three-dimensional view of the universe. Baha'is don't attempt to argue with anyone. We just state what we believe to be true.
Well, there are religions that say that the earth was created in 6 days. In this case, science doesn't say, I'll take your word for it, because it has a great deal of evidence to the contrary. Such a religion is controlled by religious dogma and rejects any facts that don't correspond to their erroneous beliefs.
The problem seems to be taking the Bible as fact or taking it as metaphor.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that too. And there are people who, when they've taken it very literally, it doesn't allow any room for science, you know, in there at all.
Right. If we can just take the Bible as metaphor, which still makes it true, it's just true as metaphor as opposed to being true as historical fact. Once we can take it as being true as a metaphor, then we can use it to improve our spiritual lives rather than wasting our time arguing with scientists.
I'd like to say a quote from Abdu'l-Bahá. "Now, these forms and rituals differ in the various churches and amongst the different sects, and even contradict one another, giving rise to discord, hatred, and disunion. The outcome of all this dissension is the belief of many cultured men that religion and science are contradictory terms, that religion needs no powers of reflection and should in no wise be regulated by science, but must of necessity be opposed, the one to the other. The unfortunate effect of this is that science has drifted apart from religion, and religion has become a mere blind and more or less apathetic following of the precepts of certain religious teachers, who insist on their own favorite dogmas being accepted even when they are contrary to science. This is foolishness, for it is quite evident that science is the light, and being so, religion truly does not oppose knowledge. We are familiar with the phrases light and darkness, religion and science. But the religion which does not walk hand in hand with science is itself in the darkness of superstition and ignorance. Much of the discord and disunion of the world is created by these man-made oppositions and contradictions. If religion were in harmony with science and they walked together, much of the hatred and bitterness now bringing misery to the human race would be at an end. Consider what it is that singles man out from among created beings and makes of him a creature apart. Is it not his reasoning power, his intelligence? Shall he not make use of these in his study of religion? I say unto you, weigh carefully in the balance of reason and science everything that is presented to you as religion. If it passes this test, then accept it, for it is truth. If, however, it does not so conform, then reject it, for it is ignorance.
In the discussion that's currently going on around the world, mostly among the Christians, there are two points of view. Either God created man pretty much as we see him today on the sixth day, according to the book of Genesis, or, as say the scientists, that man has evolved from monkeys or apes. There's no third possibility being discussed.
So where does the truth lie? We accept biblical creation as a metaphor for what actually occurred. We reject creationist science as a fallacy. The universe and the earth were created just as modern science says it was. The creation of man is a different story. It doesn't evolve from monkeys or a lump of clay. God created man, but not in that way.
We'll read the actual text, which is in response to a question about evolution. The main point being made here is that while man has evolved, and this is well established by science, there's no proof that he evolved from another species. This is an assumption that scientists have been making. God could have created the human species in a simpler form that has evolved over time to the humans of today. In this quote that you're going to hear in just a second, the term embryonic period is used to compare the 9-month gestation period of humans to the evolution over many thousands of years into the upright, tailless humans of today. Okay, here's the quote. For man, from the beginning of the embryonic period till he reaches the degree of maturity, goes through different forms and appearances. His aspect, his form, his appearance and color change. He passes from one form to another and from one appearance to another. Nevertheless, from the beginning of the embryonic period, he is of the species of man, that is to say, an embryo of a man and not of an animal. But this is not at first apparent, but later it becomes visible and evident. For example, let us suppose that man once resembled the animal and that now he has progressed and changed. Supposing this to be true, it is still not a proof of the change of species. No, as before mentioned, it is merely like the change and alteration of the embryo of man until it reaches the degree of reason and perfection. We will state it more clearly. Let us suppose that there was a time when man walked on his hands and feet or had a tail. This change and alteration is like that of the fetus in the womb of the mother, although it changes in all ways and grows and develops until it reaches the perfect form. From the beginning, it is a special species. We also see in the vegetable kingdom that the original species of a genus does not change and alter, but the form, color, and bulk may change and alter or even progress. To recapitulate, as man in the womb of the mother passes from form to form, from shape to shape, changes and develops, and is still the human species from the beginning of the embryonic period, in the same way man, from the beginning of his existence in the matrix of the world, is also a distinct species, that is, man, and has gradually evolved from one form to another. Therefore, this change of appearance, this evolution of members, this development and growth, even though we admit the reality of growth and progress, does not prevent the species from being original. Man from the beginning was in this perfect form and composition and possessed capacity and aptitude for acquiring material and spiritual perfections, and was the manifestation of these words, "We will make man in our image and likeness."
Well, I love the analogies that were used here, and I love how the spiritual evolution of mankind, that's just really beautiful to me. And you notice that Abdu'l-Bahá isn't really telling us exactly how God created man. He's not giving that one away. He's not disagreeing either with any scientific facts, just the conclusions that are drawn from them.
Let's go back to the creation of the earth in 6 days. The writings, the Baha'i writings, contain a poetic description of the Big Bang. Now, this is from the Word of God. And this was in answer to a letter that someone wrote to Baha'u'llah. "As regards thine assertions about the beginning of creation, this is a matter on which conceptions vary by reason of the divergences in men's thoughts and opinions. Wert thou to assert that it hath ever existed and shall continue to exist, it would be true. Or wert thou to affirm the same concept as is mentioned in the sacred scriptures, no doubt would there be about it, for it hath been revealed by God, the Lord of the worlds."
So he starts off by saying, if you want to believe the creation story, then that's okay. Then he goes on to say that the universe has always existed, but not always in the current form.
I'm continuing the quote. "And his creation had ever existed beneath his shelter from the beginning that hath no beginning, apart from it being preceded by a firstness which cannot be regarded as firstness, and originated by a cause inscrutable even unto all men of learning."
Okay, well, firstness, this has got to be a religious word, because I've never used it or heard it. Remember the Bible verse that says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God." So, with regard to the universe having existed, God still created it. God always existed, and creation always existed as his creation. So the universe has always existed as his creation.
Right.
You can consider God as a firstness, going back to that wonderful word, firstness, but he wasn't really first. He's the creator. He and creation are both eternal in the past and eternal in the future. Then he goes on to describe the Big Bang.
All right, this is going back to the quote. "That which hath been in existence had existed before, but not in the form thou seest today. The world of existence came into being through the heat generated from the interaction between the active force and that which is its recipient. These two are the same, yet they are different."
Okay, let's stop right here, because that's quantum physics, and I don't go there. It's too much for me. I'm sure they would have other words for this act of force in the recipient. I don't know what those would be, but they're the same, but they're different.
But it sounds a lot like yang and yin.
Yes,
philosophy.
Yes, the yang and the yang and the yin. Yes, we know in quantum physics that more basic than all the manifestations of energy and matter is a common entity that has been described as a wave.
Right.
Then he goes on to say that they are both created by the Word of God.
Okay, this is continuing that quote. Thus doth the great announcement, that's a capital letters, that's a reference to Baha'u'llah. Thus doth the great announcement inform thee about this glorious structure. Such as communicate the generating influence and such as receive its impact are indeed created through the irresistible Word of God, with a capital W, which is the cause, with a capital C, of the entire creation, while all else besides His Word are but the creatures and the effects thereof. Verily thy Lord is the expounder, the all-wise. Now, you know, in the Bible, it talks about the Word of God being the force behind the creation of the world.
They're completely intertwined. I can see that in this quote.
That's what this is saying, that you have this active force and you have the recipient of the active force. Both are created by the Word of God, whatever the Word of God is.
That's wonderful. Abdu'l-Bahá also commented on the Big Bang versus creationist theories, and he said, there were many universal cycles preceding this one in which we are living. They were consummated, completed, and their traces obliterated. The divine and creative purpose in them was the evolution of spiritual man, just as it is in this cycle. The circle of existence is the same circle. It returns.
Okay, well, I don't know if this helped at all. this is a hard thing to talk about at this depth, but I hope at least we got across the idea that science and religion can agree. There's one way of thinking about this, is that there is only one reality. I think that Abdu'l-Bahá talks about this somewhere, but I couldn't find the quote. There's only one reality. Religion describes that reality, and science describes that reality. So they have to be in agreement. If you've got a religion without science, you've got superstition. If you've got science without religion, you've got materialism. You really need both science and religion in order to describe the universe correctly.
Because we had this topic on our mind, Ron, when we looked at some writings this morning, we discovered one, and it just seemed like it was quantum physics. You know, it was just speaking to us of the science and religion topic, and I'll just read that before we close.
Okay.
It's very brief. It's coming from Baha'u'llah. O ye my branches, capital M and capital B.
So that's a reference to Baha'u'llah's sons.
A mighty force, a consummate power, lieth concealed in the world of being. Fix your gaze upon it and upon its unifying influence, and not upon the differences which appear from it.
Right. Yeah, part of quantum physics is the idea that there is this underlying wave that we talked about in earlier, is the ground from which spring all the atoms and molecules and electrons and all of that stuff that we used to think was the smallest thing that you can have in creation. Now we know that there's actually something more basic than that. And that basic thing is this thing which has been described as a wave. And it really is the stuff that everything is made of, that one subject, one substance.
It's that unifying entity.
There's no word for it, really. Yeah. Okay, well, maybe that's enough rambling. Dear friends, please call and email with your suggestions for podcasts, your questions and comments. It's a joy to be of service to you, and we hope that you'll help us maximize the benefit. And remember, you're welcome to join us at any time. You've been listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. If you'd like to learn more about the Baha'i faith, look on the internet. The international site is baha'i.org. You'll find information about the faith, and there's also links to the Baha'i communities in several dozen countries around the world. Or, in the U.S., go to baha'i.us. Remember that Baha'i is B-A-H-A-I. In Florida, our website is Emerald Coast Baha'is, that's with an S at the end, .org. EmeraldCoastBaha'is.org. Our phone numbers to talk to a human, call 1-800-22-UNITE, or in Florida, call 850-543-2129. To leave us a voicemail, toll free, call 866-590-4545. And please let us know if we can use your message on the air in one of our podcasts. You can also email us at panhandlebaha'is@aol.com. Thanks for listening.